a lot of people here. The nice thing about doing a retreat like this is it gives you a chance just to try doing the practice and seeing. It's like the Buddha had a great line. He said, "Don't believe this because I told you. You know, you must prove it true for yourself." And just like it's nice to talk about meditation, nice to talk about the practice and everything, but the only thing that matters is doing it. And the only way you can do it is try it for yourself and see is it something that you want to do. And actually doing it for a day gives you a much better chance to see if it's something. Because the only thing that matters is, you know, you're not going to walk out of here, wow. You know, life is completely different. I'm a transformed person from a day doing this. In fact, the value of this really will be is if it's something that you want to continue to apply to your life. And hopefully this, by doing it for a day, gives you a much better sense of what the practice is and whether you want to make a commitment. Just like keeping over meditation practice is a commitment. The hard thing to do, like anything, is just to keep at anything. And the only thing that'll matter isn't like, wow, I did meditation for, you know, I went on a retreat and did these hours of meditation, or on a weekend I occasionally meditate a lot. It's really what you continue to do day in, day out, because the only thing that really matters is your life. Just like the meditation itself is going to be relatively meaningless unless you change your life, because that's what matters. It's not, the meditation helps us see better, but in the end we have to help by changing and doing things. If everything's going fine, then there's not really a reason to change. And Buddhism is, and meditation is basically saying that we're not at peace. And that's really what we're trying to do in meditation, is just realize that no matter what thoughts and feelings are going on, there's no reason why we can't be at peace within it. Just like whatever situation we're in, we're thinking, God, this situation's hard. I don't want to be here. I don't want this. But the only thing that's stopping us from being at peace isn't what's out there. It's what we're doing. You know, it's just like there's not problems with other people. I mean, yes, other people have problems, but why does it disturb me? That's the problem. What is getting me upset? What am I asking for in this situation? You know, and meditation in a way is bringing back all the scattered stuff that we have and knowing that there's kind of a whole place in us. And part of it is by meditating, like just like I tell you to keep emphasizing meditation instruction, is meditate by doing it wholeheartedly, you know, by doing it completely. And that's actually the solution to our lives in general, is that you want to do things wholeheartedly. You want to be there. And part of that is being present. Think about it. If you're always thinking about something else, no matter what you're doing, and that's when I was talking about worry, fear, other things, you can just spend all your time worrying. And what does that mean? You don't even know what you're being given right now. You're getting caught up in something. You're holding on to something. And instead of being aware, wow, I'm being given this food right now. Somebody's saying a kind word. Something is, you know, there's a nice, God, the wind just feels good on me right now. All you're aware of is, wow, what am I going to do 3 weeks from now when I face whatever it is? Or, when is this person going to change? And the real question is what's stopping us from being at peace? And the whole idea of meditation is we can be at peace wherever we are. You know, there's no problem. The problem, it's like changing everything from like we have a way of viewing life from an external point of view, like everything is out there. And from the point of view of meditation, it's realized in Buddhist practice that the real problems lie in our heart, not out there. It's like, there's a great line from a famous Buddhist work, Shantideva, where he says, you know, you can either, if your feet are tender, you can either cover the whole world with leather so that you can walk freely, or you can just cover your feet in leather. Often we're viewing it like, I want the whole world to be the way I want it to be. I want others to be the way that I want it to be. I want to feel however I want to feel. Unless everything's kind of doing this, I'm not going to be happy. I'm going to be dissatisfied, not at peace. Yet it's all out there. Yet all you have to do is change your own orientation. And part of that is awakening the faith, because it actually is an act of faith to sit there on a wall and let things go. Because why are you doing that? Why do you think it works? It's not magic. You know, this isn't kind of a, you know, it really isn't kind of a magical secret technique. You know, you're just facing a wall. Why would it work? Just to let go of things. Well, it's like there's a nice teaching I always like, that the Buddha can be found in all places, at all times, and in all situations. What we're really looking for is always there. It's kind of like an image they like using in Buddhism. It's kind of like we have this jewel on our forehead, and we spend our whole life looking for it, and it's right between our eyes. And in Buddhism, all the action you're doing is trying to awaken the fact that this is the case. Just like I was kind of just thinking before the class, a thought kind of arised in my mind of how it works is, I remember somebody who had been running this temple before me said, and when they had the earthquake in 1989, the next morning the hall was filled with people meditating. The best attended Sunday class I think I've done since I'm here was after September 11th. Okay, well, why does that happen? Usually because there's a line I always like from a Buddhist scripture. She says, "Thus shall you think of this fleeting world, a bubble in a stream, a child's laugh, a phantasm, a dream." Now, and we'll go, "No, this is no dream. This is real. This is reality. This is heavy stuff." But then something happens and you realize all those problems aren't real. If you were going to die today, which of your problems would be real? Yeah, think about it. How do you know you're not going to die today? Statistically, it's a low probability, but it's not even out of there. I mean, get enough people, somebody's going to die today. Even unexpectedly, just like somebody I knew in the Sangha. I remember just had one of those kind of bolt of lightning type things where she's driving along a road at 55 miles an hour and a tree fell on her car. You know, half a second before or after, she would have been okay. She died. But that's the point of view of meditation is that we can find peace wherever we are. The only reason we're not at peace is in our own hearts. In fact, I was just reading this book, I used it in some recent classes, of somebody who was in a concentration camp in Buchenwald, and he met this man who was so at peace, he said, you felt like you wanted to shake him and say, how can you be at peace? What's wrong with you? And he said the man could see everything. And he said, if you look with real eyes, things are as they always are. Buchenwald is everywhere. The light that we're seeking is everywhere. Nothing really changes. And it's a very important teaching that no matter how you feel, what's real is there. Sit still. And you can find what you're seeking. You know, our deepest longing is being met. We just have to let go of other things. You know, let go of our opinions, our ideas. Let go of the fact that we're always telling ourselves a story of what all of this means. Just like I can think of what all these people said after September. I remember driving along the road on the September 11th, and somebody saying, you know, I could sit in an office and a plane could just crash into the office and kill me. And I thought, statistically, the chances of you dying from a heart attack are 100 times and have always been that way, that you could just die anyway sitting in an office. You know, there's lots of ways these have always been the possibility. Nothing had changed on September 11th. And that's the case. And we're trying to see what's real, and we're trying just to, and Buddhism is based that we can, that there's nothing, you know, and the thing that's creating the suffering in the world and in ourselves is what we call in Buddhism greed or desire. What are we asking for? You know, what are we trying to grasp? And then the other fire they call in Buddhism is anger or ill will. And all anger or ill will is very simple. We're not getting what we want. It's frustrated desire. Think about it. You don't never get angry or upset, envious or anything else if you're getting what you want. It all comes out that you're not getting what you want. And then then the next fire is, is ignorance or delusion. You know, the same thing really. You know, greed, hate, and delusion. And what delusion is a story we weave about what we don't, of not getting what we want. How the world isn't fair. People aren't fair. We're getting a raw deal. Things don't make sense. Things are confused. Well, actually, things aren't confused. You know, you look at the Arab-Israeli situation. These things have been going on since there's been people. You know, there's absolutely nothing new in this, nothing surprising in something like that people don't get along. And you look at it, and what people are doing is really quite simple. Everybody's saying, this is what I want, and I don't care what you want. When you break it down, that's exactly why they're not getting along. Neither side's ever, I never hear anybody saying, well, what can I do to make the other side happy? So they'll trust me, and we can get along and be at peace. And I just kind of think, if you want a reverse of a more enlightened action, I think of Nelson Mandela getting out of prison after being there for 30 years and saying, no, he forgave everything. And people actually said, oh, wow, we can trust this fellow, even though he's black. Somehow I think if he takes over the country, we're not going to all end up in, a concentration camp or be kicked out of the country or be grossly mistreated. And they were willing to give power. Now imagine if Nelson Mandela came out of the prison angry. There never would have been peace. You know, it still would have been going on. And what we have to do is realize that we have to be at peace ourselves. And that means, from a Buddhist point of view, you have to deal with your desire and look at what you're asking for. Suffering, the Buddha had a most basic teaching was the Four Noble Truths. And it's one of those things you can always look at and apply to your life because it's telling you what's going on right now. The first noble truth is suffering exists. Not that everything is suffering. People sometimes say, Buddhists are gloomy. Everything is suffering. No, it's just you can't avoid it. Not that there's no happiness or joy, but eventually the suffering pops in. You know, just like, you know, you eat, it's good. You keep eating, it's suffering. You know, you kind of can't keep eating. You kind of can't keep enjoying anything. And a line I always like of basic Buddhist teaching is impermanence. That there's nothing you can grasp. Everything is changeable. Whatever makes you happy has to go away. Flip side is whatever makes you sad is going to go away too. Everything is changing. And that's why suffering exists. Meaning is that things are not really satisfying. Find a way to make yourself happy. Work at it. How you keep staying happy. Tell me. If you can come up with something that you can hang on to and say, wow, my kids make me happy. Then they become, then they become teenagers. Then they become adults and they don't even remember us. And they take us for granted. But no, I'm just saying anything, can you find something that will keep making you happy? And that's a very Buddhist teaching that, and the very life ourselves is going to be taken away from us. So no matter what we do, and this is, somebody said in Buddhism, that if you don't keep impermanence in front of you, there's no reason to practice because you're kind of in a dream that somehow you can hold on to this stuff and it has this importance it doesn't. It's one of the reasons they always say that a good way to kind of, that unless you're going to be aware, keep in front of the fact that you're going to die in front of you. Now, to a lot of people, that sounds so depressing. Yet it's reality. In fact, everything else I can teach you in this, you can think about your life, is completely uncertain about your future. Only one thing is a rock certainty. You're going to die. This has to end. And from a Buddhist point of view, that isn't, we just want to see reality, and reality isn't bad, because in the end, there's nothing here we really have to cling to, And we want to find what's real, and then we can be freed of this obsessive holding on to it. And it's why they say that, in a way to describe what you're seeking in Buddhism is freedom from fear. So you can face all of life and death without fear. And if you think about it, it's what we all want most. Think of it. Don't you desperately want to know that there's nothing to fear? That no matter what happens to you, you know, just like the fellow I was reading about who was in Buchenwald, he was, you know, he had no fear, and the fellow was saying everyone else was terrified, and there's this one fellow who had no fear. And you kind of went to him like a spring because you wanted to know why he wasn't afraid and why he was at peace in the midst of all this death and hell. And that's what we all want. It's why one of our scriptures begins, Om, hail to the one who leaps beyond all fear. And that's what we're looking for, and that's what we really want, to know no matter what happens in our life, we'll be okay. Since we can't really control what happens to us. We work at it, and that's important. In fact, that's part of life, and actually an essential part of training, is to work to make the best we can out of it, because that's Buddhist training, is really trying to live the best possible way, trying to minimize suffering. Now, suffering is due to what we're holding on to, the second noble truth. So whenever you suffer, simple question, what are you asking for? You know, what are you saying you want? Because you're suffering because you're not getting something. Sometimes it's obvious, I have pain, I don't want pain. Or I don't feel good, or whatever it is, and it seems obvious, but actually we don't have to be disturbed by pain. Think about it. You know, I know people who run marathons, they purposely go into pain thinking just because they've convinced themselves this is good pain. And I always think if people put half that energy that they do into a lot of those things, I mean, people will put tremendous energy into a lot of things in life. You know, it's the reason you do it is that you think it's worthwhile. In fact, nobody would have kids if they knew kind of, if you had to sign the line what this meant. You know, like, yes, I'm going to, you know, okay, I'm going to wake up 3 in the morning 3,000 times. I'm going to, you know, and go the whole list of what it means. You'd have trouble kind of signing that list, but you know when you're doing it, it's worthwhile, generally. At times you don't, but most of the time you don't say, wow. You know, I'm not doing it. And people do, it's like somebody I know, you know, was describing to me climbing Mount Everest. I'm just thinking, okay, he just completely put all his energy into, for a month or more, went through exquisite pain, because he was describing how when you're at the high elevations, you have a splitting headache all the time. You can't sleep, you can't eat, your head just throbs like a migraine the whole time. And you think, okay, why did you do that? Why? Because he wanted to be able to say, I was on top of Mount Everest, which he didn't quite get to because, you know, he didn't quite make it to the very top either, because you need all conditions right to make the summit ascent. And you go, and all you do when you get to the top is you rush right down. There's not even a view. It's usually in the clouds. Usually, you know, you don't kind of spend, wow, you sit there and you feel, wow, I'm on top of the world. This is great. No, what you just were doing is you wanted to be able to say to yourself and others, I climbed Mount Everest. Okay, why? Classic delusion is the first fellow who climbed Mount Everest, Mallory, who died doing it. They asked him, why are you doing it? His famous line, which we've all heard, which began with him, is, it's there. Dumbness. Why? That is called being driven by karma, for doing things because you feel like, I want to do it. The world's full of suffering because people do things because it's there, or they want to do it, or they feel driven to do something. I mean, what is the real meaning of it? Why would you want to die like he did to climb a mountain? What difference does it make? I mean, the people around, you know, the Sherpas never bothered to climb the mountain. It was there. They kind of knew they could do it, but why? I mean, they didn't know it was the tallest mountain in the world. They just It's a mountain, you know, it's the biggest one they know of. Why climb it? What is the purpose of what you're doing? Now, there's a deep spiritual purpose to whatever we're doing, but we have to kind of find it. You know, it's actually found by just being there wherever we are. The Buddha can be found in whatever we're doing. What we're seeking is not on the top of a mountain. It's not by being famous, because all being famous is thinking it's important what everyone else thinks of you. Great. A lot of people think you're great. It doesn't make you happier. Betty Ford Clinic wouldn't be filled of all those famous people. You don't have all those celebrities saying, now I'm famous, now I'm happy. Whoever says that? You know, they say it briefly when they become famous, but nobody ever says 20 years later, wow, the thing that made me happy is being famous. Because all that is what other people think of you. As they say in Buddhism, be beyond both praise and blame. What is real? First noble truth is suffering exists. Second noble truth is that it's due to what we're asking for. It's due to what we're attached to. Third noble truth is nirvana exists. What we want is already there. You know, the only reason we're not at peace and we're not realizing what's real in this life of change is because we won't let go of all those other things. What are you doing when you can't sit still in meditation? You can't let go of all that stuff. You're holding on to all your desires, fears, worries, feelings. And then you wonder why you're not at peace. Why you can't find what's real. And the Buddha himself said, there is an unborn, undying, unchanging. If there's not, there'd be no refuge from this world of change, of birth, of death. You know, just like a famous Zen, in Zen, although our tradition doesn't use it often, they give koans out in the other main Soto, the other main Zen tradition, Rinzai, where you meditate on a question. Often the questions are kind of the obvious puzzles of life, like, what is your original face before your parents were born? You know, who are you? You know, what were you before your parents were born? Who is it that's breathing in or out? Another famous Zen koan. You know, who is it? What is breathing in or out? These are real questions, because that's what we really want to know. What we really want to do is find the meaning of our life. And what we all long for isn't to be meaningful by climbing Mount Everest, because that is a way the person's trying to give his life meaning. I'm somebody who climbed Everest. I don't want to look back at my life and say I didn't go for it. You know, I'll listen to people say that. Well, I did this because but in the end, when they look back at their life, what you're not going to care about really isn't those things. It's going to really be how you live. And what we're going to regret is, you know, really, what have we given the fire of our life to? Where have we put our effort? Where have we put our heart? You know, hell, the world's full of people putting their heart into, you know, I'll watch something in the, you know, I'll read or watch something about people like collecting things. I'm thinking, there's people who are just putting their heart into comic books, putting into furniture, old cars, paintings. And you can, you know, in our culture, you'll think art is a marvelous, wonderful thing. Being an art collector, well, that seems reasonable. But of course, they're just collecting things because it's famous. Nobody who's collecting it's really collecting it because it's so beautiful. Because actually, if people just wanted beautiful art, why aren't people paying for imitations of those things to put in their rooms that no one could tell the difference of? If you just want a gorgeous painting, you can get a perfect imitation for a few $1,000s that an art critic couldn't tell the difference in. You'd have to bring it on a microscope to know that it's not the real painting. So no one would know the difference. If all you care about the art is, you would have, you know, there'd be this great market for imitations of the famous art because it's the same thing. No, people want, I want the real Picasso. Not the beauty, I want the Picasso. I want the name. You know, I want what that is. So you have to look at what you're asking for. And then the fourth noble truth is as the Eightfold Path, which is really Buddhist training, that there's a way to free ourselves, the Buddha said. And the Buddha was just a man who lived 2,500 years ago, who said he can't figure out in this world of suffering, of birth and death, He knows there has to be something more real. And then he left being a prince to find that. And then he found it and then taught it for the next 45 years till he died. Yeah, 45 years till he died. And as a Buddha, what a Buddhist is somebody who says, we can do what the Buddha did. You know, that there's no real difference between us. Anyway, any questions as I'm talking on here? Does this all make sense to everyone? Yeah. Buddha's pointing to on how to... Well, in Buddhism, you can use the Buddha in different ways. You know, there's, in the sense that there's a historical Buddha, Shakyamuni, a man who lived 2,500 years ago. So in meditation, you're trying to do what the Buddha did under the Bodhi tree 2,500 years ago. And that's actually what you're all trying to do in meditation right now, is meditate like the Buddha did. And one of the nice images I always like of the Buddha did is the Buddha felt attacked by his fear and his desire as he sat under the tree. And if you look at the statue we have on our altar, it has his right hand going down to the ground. And it's called an earth witness Buddha. But the Buddha under the Bodhi tree put his right hand down and said, earth witness my resolve, I will not be moved. You know, that none of the fear, none of the desire will move him. And that's what we're trying to do in our meditation, say, no matter what we do, we're not going to be moved by it. We're trying just to sit there and let the fear come through us, and we don't have to react to it. Let the desire come through us and not move by it. Then there's the image of the Buddha, is that it's what we find in our heart in meditation. You know, I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha in one level means that in Buddhism you'll say everything is the Buddha. Because in the end, we have the same heart. You know, one nice way I like they describe Buddhist practice is that you're seeking the bodhicitta, you're seeking the Buddha heart. And that's our real heart. What we think of as ourselves isn't fundamental. If you let go of it, underneath your desire, your fear, your opinions, your judgments of who you are, you're the exact same heart as the Buddha had. And we all have that same heart. And that's actually what we're all looking for. And that's what we're trying to find in meditation, the Buddha heart. And then we can see that everything has the light of Buddha. Everything is the same as Shakyamuni Buddha. You know, there's, you know, even the worst person, you know, is still the Buddha. They just don't know it. But they're still, you know, that doesn't change what somebody is. A cat's still a cat, even though I don't know if my cat knows she's a cat. You know, she just knows she's perfect. And she'd be the center of the whole world. And she's probably hiding right now. Too many people around. She likes people in more manageable bunches. You know, probably hiding. And then the Dharma is the teaching, and that's what we're trying to put into effect. That's actually what this class is. This is hopefully, you know, the teaching of how to practice this, because how do you find the Buddha heart? The Dharma is the teaching of the Buddha. And the Buddha said after he died, don't worry about me being dead. When you see the Dharma, when you see the teaching, you see me. Because really what my real body is the teaching. I'm pointing you towards the way. And you follow the Dharma, because the Buddhist Dharma is giving you a way to find the truth. Now, there's lots of different Buddhist traditions, practices, but the essence, like basically everything I'm saying in this class is universal to any Buddhist. You know, this is basic Buddhist teaching that every Buddhist, you know, generally, you know, should believe in. I mean, it's kind of simple, straightforward stuff. And then the Sangha is the fact that you have to take refuge in living people practicing the way. You know, you're not just reading the teaching and saying, I know how to do this. It's almost like saying, okay, here's an instruction of how to climb a mountain. I'm going to do this on my own, and I'm not going to really consult with anybody else who's done it before. You know, I know the way up there. I can figure the path out. And actually, no, you need to practice with others, both people walking along with you and people who hopefully are farther up the path than you can say, no, that's the right turn. That sounds right. Nah, you're going off a little bit. Because that's actually vital, because the nature of it is that we are deluded. From a Buddhist point of view, how do you know you're deluded? Are you seeing the Buddha in everything right now? If you were in Buchenwald, would you say everything is as it always is, and there's no real difference? That's somebody who is doing pretty good spiritually, you know? You know, I hope, you know, I would pray that I could, you know, you hope, you know, you can be doing that well when you're in that situation, because that's an extreme one, concentration camp, and still seeing what's real. You know, where you're not getting caught up in what's there. It's just, and you don't have to be bound, even if you feel suffering or something else. Nothing is really binding you. It's just the feeling. If you don't hold on to it, you just feel lousy, and that's okay. You know, it's just a feeling that's passing. You know, there's no reason to be disturbed by pain. Like a famous Buddhist scripture said, do not flee pain as if it's not real. Just seek serenity in the oneness, and the pain will dissolve of its own. You know, if you don't try to do anything with it, it'll just come and go of its own. And what you want will always be there. You don't have to worry about it. If life is difficult, it's difficult. You know, and actually, I can almost guarantee life will often be difficult. I don't know any of people practicing Buddhism who don't find things difficult. You know, this isn't making everything easy. Just like I don't know anyone who says, wow, training is so easy. This Buddhist practice, wow, I just find this really simple and straightforward. I wish I could tell you that. But no, it's not easy. But the trick is that when you don't do it, you're just generating more suffering. When you're not present, it's not going to make you happy. You know, as the fellow who wrote about Buchenwald, he said, everybody else in the camp was dreaming. They were dreaming of not being there, dreaming of their wives, their homes, the lives that often they weren't even happy in before they were in Buchenwald. And nobody was willing to be there except this fellow. And it's a good example of the teaching. You know, even though, and finding the teaching, even though he wasn't a Buddhist, I think he was a Christian Scientist, but it doesn't matter. What's real is what's real. And Buddhism is just a way to find the truth. It's not the truth. You know, it's not like, wow, there's a, you know, like, reality is a Buddha. Reality is reality. Buddhism points to it. You know, and hopefully it points, from my point of view, better than anything else. But it's still just, as the Buddha said, it's just a thing of pointing. You know, it's just a way to see a description of the truth. Just like the Buddha said, it'll disappear at some point. Because it's just a way of practicing, a way of explaining reality, a way of practicing. And those things come and go. They're as impermanent as anything else.